Tonight on a very special Infinite Labs podcast, we're interviewing Patrick Klepek from GiantBomb.com. And interview is probably a wrong word. We're just hanging out with him, talking about a little bit of everything. Hope you enjoy this. By the way, this is second half of Infinite Labs podcast number 54. So if you want the full effect, check out that. You'll find this entire interview there, plus more of our usual witty banter. So anyways, now to the interview with Patrick Klepek from GiantBomb.com. This is amazing.
We have a very special guest today on the Infinite Labs podcast.
Kevin Nelson, welcome.
No, it is Patrick Klepek, who is a writer for Giant Bomb and one of our favorite dudes on the internet.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. That is awfully nice of you to say. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thanks is all on our side. I mean, you know, you're coming on our little humble podcast, who we have a handful of listeners and stuff.
Hey, everyone's got to start somewhere.
Of course.
I certainly did the same thing. If you're doing anything, you're ahead of 99% of people. Everyone starts with zero.
Yep. That's pretty much how we felt. You know, we're still trying to find our voice and, you know, get used to talking to people and, you know, just recording videos and things like that. So it's been really interesting this past year. So Dan and I and Kevin have really tried to work hard on like getting comfortable talking just about anything video game wise. So,
and getting comfortable with our own voices. I mean, yeah, nothing like hearing your own voice recorded.
Oh no, you don't worry. You never get over that part. I still don't awesome. Care for my voice.
Good.
You know, the most you can do is try and replace my likes and us with pauses, but I'm still pretty bad at that. And yep. And all you can really do is just try and get better at it. But yeah, you never really grow. I think if you grow to like your voice, then maybe you're in it
problem.
For the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of public speaking. We had definitely the counts where they would count how many likes and we would do. So that was definitely something that I was very cognizant of. So
I wanted to start off with just asking how the transition is going, you know, kind of being a remote Bombcast member or a Giant Bomb member in Chicago and everything. So
yeah, they kicked me off the podcast. Yeah, not allowed.
That's why you're on ours.
Part of the podcast is a thing that happens, you know, with people in the room. It's part of what makes that stuff work. I'm sure you guys realize that when you guys do your podcast together. You can recreate some stuff over Skype and Hangouts and things like that. Technology is making that stuff easier, but there will never be a replacement for being in the room with folks. That was definitely a challenge when I told Jeff that I was going to be moving. You know, my preference was to stay with the site, but obviously understood if, you know, that didn't make sense. But, you know, he wanted me to stay on, and so the challenge for me was then figuring out, okay, so for this personality-based site where a lot of the charm of it comes from the group dynamics. How do I figure out what I'm doing here that doesn't just become like Patrick writing his own blog that happens to be hosted on Giant Bomb? Some of that makes sense. I just kind of keep doing the features and kind of expanding on those things that I was doing already on the site. But I didn't want to lose that interaction with other people. And so fortunately, there was someone else in a similar boat, Alex Navarro over in New York. And I talked for a long time as soon as I kind of knew that I was going to be moving, then a morning show made sense. And the idea there being that Giant Bomb starts pretty much everything pretty late in the afternoon or evening on the West Coast. And so a lot of the world and even a lot of the U.S. doesn't get a chance to tune into things. So I mostly just started trying to identify parts of our audience that weren't being served, and it was there a way with my newfound time to maybe make them a little happier. And so that's kind of where I've put my time and effort into, and it's been working out pretty well so far. But I definitely miss working with the guys, and I have way too much time on my hands, and sometimes that can actually be sort of problematic. Part of the reason I always hated being a freelancer was because every minute you're not working is money you're not making.
Yeah.
And being salaried, that's not necessarily the case financially, but I always feel like I should be doing something, and maybe sometimes I should probably just chill out for a second and not feel like I need to be doing something every minute. But overall, it's been good so far. So, I mean, hopefully people like the stuff that I've been doing.
Oh, yeah. Yours, Spooking with Scoops has never been better.
I got to honestly say, I like your Worth Reading stuff quite a bit. I found a lot of indie games that I've really enjoyed playing, just even the small experiences. I remember one that was, I want to say it was like a weird side scroller that had a really like art, like a 50s art style. I'm trying to remember the name
right,
of it.
Right, yeah.
And it was like three levels long, but I remember just playing that. I think I played through it twice because I liked it so much. And I wanted them to develop that into like a bigger game after seeing that. And, you know, just finding little gems like that. I love reading that the article and going, oh, I'm going to try that out and seeing what comes out of it. And I think Candy Box was one of the ones that you guys talked about on the podcast once that I got really obsessed with. And then eventually I got like six of my coworkers starting to play it at work as well and just have it running in the background on Google Chrome. So building up your candies so that you could build other stuff. And they had the same reaction that I had when I first heard about it. It just started running. And then you see the other stuff start popping up and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I'm super curious to see what that guy does with the sequel. I know he said he's making another one of those, but you know, half of the charm of that game was not knowing a whole lot about it and people trying to keep that a secret from you when you actually started kind of getting into it. So what he does the second time around, you know, he's known for having tricks. So it's like what tricks does he play when you know that he's trying to trick you? And I'm curious to see what exactly he does a second time around.
Yeah, it was great, exciting to, you know, see that reaction on friends after you tell them about something and then they go and they open up the web browser and like, what's going on here? And then 20 minutes later they go, oh, I get it now. Okay, things are going to open up the more I sit here and let this run. So I think it was really satisfying for a game that you wouldn't expect anything out of, an ASCII-looking game, so...
Yeah, I think it's the moment that you can start making potions is when it's like, okay, like this is going places I did not expect. Yep. And in a really surprising way. I mean, that's, you know, so many games these days, especially if you're primarily interested in the big budget stuff, you know everything about those games except for the ending by the time they're released.
So
to have something that's a real genuine surprise is few and far between. I think that's part of the reason that it caught on so fast.
Go ahead.
Yeah, do you ever get to watch any of the, or do you ever watch any of the Giant Bomb content, especially stuff that you're not on anymore? I mean, do you keep up with that, or are you kind of, you know, in your own place on the site?
No, I probably at least two or three times a week. So the spot I'm in right now, people listening to this can't see this, but behind me is a TV, and I've got an HDMI cord wired up to it, mostly to play games, but I will also, you know, dual monitor my computer, and I'll drag a quick look onto that screen and just kind of have it running in the background while,
nice,
you know, I'm catching up on email and things like that. Because I'm not so much interested in seeing the game as much as I'm, you know, I just like hearing those guys bullshit.
I think all of us here do that as well. I can say when I'm doing other work, I actually throw your guys' stuff on in the background. And it's just even, you know, the long form stuff like Unprofessional Fridays or, you know, any of the random live streams that you guys do, I just throw it up there and it's just, you know, background noise, which is good because you guys are so funny and entertaining that it helps the day go along much better for me. So,
yeah, our content is so high quality, you don't have to pay attention to it. That's really a motto that we...
Oh, did I do it again?
Yeah, you did it again.
I put my foot in my mouth. Talking to Jeff at PAX this year.
The highest compliment is that, you know, even when people aren't in a position to fully pay attention, they still kind of want to get a sense of what's going on. I mean, we have a pretty laid back vibe. So the fact that we can be a background noise for people in a way, I think, I think that's incredibly complimentary, but I don't know who these people are that can listen to 3.5 hour podcasts. I am not one of them.
We do.
I have to say
the only time I did that was when I was on it. So I maybe get like halfway through most of them before I realize I'm woefully behind. But the quick looks are something that I can just kind of put on in the background, and oftentimes I'll check out the ones for games like Killer is Dead or something that I don't expect I'm gonna play. I definitely try and keep up because I want to have a sense of what else is going on the site.
Yeah, I think the Bombcast is all three of ours. Favorite. Soundtrack on at work.
Actually, I use it when I go to and from work. So yeah. I throw it on my car radio when I'm driving to and from work. So I can.
See, that makes sense. I don't have a commute. Like, yeah. My commute is, so I roll out of bed, like, up there.
Yep.
And then I look at my phone for, like, half an hour, and then, like, well, I should probably go downstairs, and then I do that, and then I've arrived. But, yeah, I part of the reason that I can't keep up with it is because I don't have a whole lot of time where I'm just sort of killing time. Like, yeah. Usually I'm at the computer or something, and like sitting down and listening to just pure audio when I'm writing something, or listening to people talk when I'm writing something is pretty difficult. So, yeah, I don't really have a commute except for when I run, and I barely keep up with the other podcasts I listen to. So, yeah, I understand. I definitely understand.
What other podcasts do you listen to?
Pretty much nothing to do with games. The only other gaming podcasts, well, there are two. One is very irregular, which is Michael Abbott's The Brainy Gamer, which he is a drama teacher and academic out of Indiana that runs a pretty exceptional blog where he looks at games from a very interesting and smart perspective, especially considering his background. And he also has an interview podcast where he talks with various designers and folks about games that I would highly recommend. And then Idle Thumbs, which is you know, where Giant Bomb steals all its jokes from. And then it's also, you know, it's three game designers talking about games.
Nice.
I think it, you know, it provides a lot of really interesting insight into their own process and their own looks at other people's games that I think you just don't get if you're someone like myself who has a very broad understanding of game design but hasn't designed a game myself. But other than that, you know, I tell this to writers all the time that if you only read games writing and you only play games, like it's going to severely constrict your ability to actually comment and look at games in an interesting way, because so much of the outside world informs these games that if you only are looking at these games, you're not going to get the big picture. So, you know, my other passion is I pay attention to politics pretty closely, and I listen to a lot of tech podcasts and things like that. Basically stuff that I don't have time to pay attention to on a day-to-day basis that I can throw on and get sort of a broader sense of what's happening. But yeah, other than Idle Thumbs and the Brady Gamer and the Bombcast that I can fit in, I definitely kind of avoid games when I'm not doing my job.
Do you find it hard to, or I guess maybe contextualize like your passion for games versus like reporting on it or kind of analyzing it? I mean, do you find it hard to just enjoy games for themselves, or, you know, are you always kind of analyzing it or kind of looking at it through a writer's point of view?
That not so much, especially because I don't have a post quota or anything like that. I think if Giant Bomb was structured more like, you know, a Kotaku or a Joystick, where we definitely try and get up a fair amount of content, but we don't have any sort of like strict guidelines like, hey, today you've got to get four things up. I think if we were structured that way, I would absolutely be looking at games in ways of being able to dissect my experiences to make sure I had stuff to write about. But fortunately, in the position I'm in now, I can do that when I feel like I really have something to say. What I do find that I have a problem with is I feel like I have to play everything, especially when we get around to like Game of the Year.
Hear you guys talking about that a lot,
And that's very stressful. I think that is both detrimental to my enjoyment of games as a hobby, because oftentimes I am rushing through them, and then it's just not the way that most people play games. It's not the way that I played games before I got into this line of work, and it doesn't allow you to kind of like marinate in a game world, like, or stick around with it longer than the credits. You know, like, I just finished GTA 5 like 2 hours ago, and I will probably never touch it again, even though there's plenty more to do, because I've got Puppeteer and Rayman Legends and Beyond and all this other stuff that, you know, I think may come up at the end of the year, and I need to have a sense of where that all lands. And so that's one of the things that I'm hoping maybe to ratchet back in the future, is trying to not feel like I need to play everything so that I can speak to everything, because by trying to speak to everything, you know, possibly you speak to nothing by not having a deep understanding of any one thing and only sort of a surface level understanding of a lot of things. So
are you going to be back in San Fran for the end of the year?
That's my plan. I had intentions of being back there earlier on this year. It just hasn't quite worked out for some pretty obvious reasons of things that have happened this year. And I'd maybe like to come back for the console launch stuff. Like, that's just not a conversation we've had, but I do intend to go back for the Game of the Year stuff because that was always so much fun, and I would definitely like to be there for whatever we put together.
The arguments that you guys have are great on those, I think. The discussions that go, and listening to, like, Brad talk for 2 hours on Minerva's Den, I think is one of the most entertaining things.
Or, I wish I could have been there because I would have been on his side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Minerva's Den was probably one of my favorite things that came out that year, DLC or not. So I think I would have bludgeoned that Mass Effect 2 DLC to death in favor of Minerva's Den had I the chance.
Personally, I love the argument about Sleeping Dogs. I mean, hearing that come up again during the PAX panel this year, pretty much during our Game of the Year discussions last year, I was in position of Vinny putting up a huge argument of Sleeping Dogs and pretty much got shut down by these two.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We're basically aping Giant Bomb when we do our podcast.
You guys have just the great salient points of conversation, so.
Yeah, the Game of the Year stuff is fun, and there's certainly a dynamic that goes into it where, at least this is how I approach it. I'm sure everyone else would have a different way of describing it, but by the end of the year, you sort of have a sense of where a lot of the list might go. You just don't know what order it's going to end up in. Yeah. And the way I always go, I always try and go, and maybe shouldn't give away my secrets, but I always try and go in with one game that I am willing to sacrifice others for in order to make sure it is on the list. So I killed Mortal Kombat the first year because of its shoddy online play. I don't know how Jeff let me get away with that one. I think I've been in a bad place when we were in the discussion because in retrospect, I feel kind of bad about it. But I killed Mortal Kombat's place on the list in favor of Rayman Origins, which I don't feel bad about and think Brad's discussion of that game as being a Busby clone is monstrous.
I only played that briefly, but I do have to say that I wish I had been able to play that with these two guys because that looks like a really fun multiplayer game. And it's beautiful.
It's an excellent single player game too. Yeah, and Legends this year is even better than Origins.
Yeah, we got to play that.
We
haven't played that yet.
It's good to see 2D, you know, platformers actually doing good again.
So Patrick, I want to ask you something about with the new consoles coming out. Do you have any of them pre-ordered? And if so, or if not, are you going to get one on day one, either the PS4 or the Xbox One?
Yeah, I've got both pre-ordered. My PS4 was supposed to be like a couple days late, and then for whatever reason, the shipments on Amazon got updated, and now it'll be here on launch. You know, if I end up going back to the office to be with them for the launch stuff, I guess I won't be here when mine shows up, and it won't matter, but. Yeah, I'm ordering both of them. It's part of the fun for me anyway. Having a decent PC now, like it's not that vitally important. There really aren't that many exclusive games, and even the ones that are there, I don't know if they're necessarily worth being there on day one for. Like, we'll see how Dead Rising 3 is. I think that has potential to be a real sleeper hit, the same way that Dead Rising was, but. You know, Knack will probably be okay, but I don't expect it to change the world. Drive Club isn't really my thing. Not to mention there'll be a version of that on PlayStation Plus, even if it's kind of a stripped-down version. But it'll be free if you've got a subscription there. Killer Instinct, like, could not care less about. And, although, I think it looks pretty okay. It looks better than new Killer Instinct probably should.
Yeah.
But it's just not really my thing. So, yeah, I've ordered both of them. Because I think being part of the madness, for better or worse, is a fun part of the enthusiast angle. But like, do I think that people need to go out of their way to get those machines on day one? Like, probably not. Like, there's probably not a whole lot there that isn't worth waiting a couple of months to see how that stuff shakes out first.
Well, yeah, our house is kind of divided because I'm not pre-ordering any of them because I have we all have decent, really good computers. John John's got the Xbox One pre-ordered.
And I have to because, I mean, I really do because I'm supporting it. So
yeah, John actually
I actually work for Microsoft. So
oh, okay.
I'm actually helping with Xbox One.
Can
so
you talk about that?
Yeah, I can say that I'm doing it. Like, I'm actually helping with the launch. So
are you getting one of those white Xbox?
I'm not a full-time employee, but but I am actually part of the big support group starting getting it. So I know we're going to be supporting the press coming up soon. So do you know, are you guys getting press kits with Giant Bomb? I wonder.
I would imagine, but being the guy in Chicago,
you don't get in on that?
Oh.
No, I mean, that stuff's always extremely limited. Like, if we, you know, I expect we'll get one. Like, yeah. I, you know, that's not trying to be vague for any particular reason. I'm just not involved in those conversations because that will go to the San Francisco office. You know, it's going to be it sounds like from what I understand, it's going to be different than the launch of the 360, where there was just Microsoft blanketed the press with just tons and tons of Xboxes. We're like, how many do you need? Like, I mean, like 3/4 of them would red ring. Like, no joke. I remember
really press Xboxes would red ring already.
Yeah, I remember like the ones they were sending out for like as the review units, like the ones that were first coming off the line that were going to like EGM back when I worked for 1UP, you know, got all that stuff first because they were print. So, you know, back when that mattered, they were ensuring that print got copies of the games and the hardware several months in advance. So the Xbox 360 showed up pretty early. And I think 3/4 of those went back.
Wow.
Like within the first week. It was pretty bad early on. And from what I understand, both PS4 and Xbox One, like, press is going to get that stuff early, but it's gonna come in hot. And my guess is allocation will be pretty low because, you know, they're going to want to blanket and sell as many of those as they can versus getting – neither side really needs the press on board. And whereas with the Xbox 360, getting the press positive and talking good about the machine was really important to Microsoft. And I think other than having just a great machine with a great interface, especially for relatives of the time, it really worked in their favor to make sure that the press had just about all the access they wanted for that launch.
Yeah, and Kevin's the guy with he's got the PlayStation 4 pre-order.
Yeah, pretty much after seeing the Sony press conference at E3, I fanboyed out. I got a little too excited. But I'm that guy who more or less every console except for Xbox One because money's limited, but pretty much I buy everything day one and then usually regret it for about 6 to 8 months, you know, before games come out.
Yeah, it makes for a very interesting
contrast.
Yeah, back and forth on our podcast.
Yeah, like these two just got into 3DS in the last, month or two?
Yeah.
And I had one at launch, so I thought...
Yeah, me too. Bad idea.
That thing, it's...
No, Pylonese is great. Shut up.
Well, mine stayed in sleep mode for almost an entire year. It was caked with dust by the time I opened it.
Yeah, but right now it has an incredible launch, or not launch, but an incredible lineup. Like, if you're just getting into a 3DS now, like, there are tons of really, really terrific games for really cheap. I mean, Fire Emblem, Super Mario 3D World, there's so much stuff. Like, the Wii U is the same way. Like, I bought one at launch, like, stupid idea. But, like, I want to be there for the launch stuff. And now I have Brad's Nintendo Network ID permanently. So
hell yeah.
He's never going to get that. But, like, if you bought a Wii U right now, like, pretty solid, like, price drop, Wind Waker HD, Super Mario 3D World, like, tons of awesome stuff, like, Wonderful 101, Pikmin 3, like, pretty decent lineup of games if you waited a year. Like, yeah, people that buy at launch are dumb, and I will continue to be one of those people.
Yeah, I was a chump and bought my Wii U when they announced Wind Waker HD. I didn't actually wait for any sort of price drop or any special bundle or anything.
Right.
Just kind of on a whim. And I've gotten a couple of things on there, but I did just get Wind Waker HD, and I gotta say that game is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
It's super pretty. I can't wait to get back and play some more of that. So,
so everybody that we have on this on our podcast, including ourselves, we always talk about. We always ask everybody what your gamer origin is. So, like myself, the first game that I remember actually playing was Bruce Lee on an Apple II. And John?
Centipede for me on the arcade because one of my mom's friend actually had a stand-up cabinet in their house. So they would plop me in front of that for about you know, hours at a time and just leave me sitting there. I got really good at Centipede, so.
Yeah, and for me, it's Snafu on the Intellivision.
So, what is your gamer origin, Patrick Klepek?
God, I want to say...
It doesn't have to be the very first game, just something that you, the first real memory that you have of playing that game, or a game.
I mean, honestly, I think it's the biggest memory that sticks out of my earliest game experiences were, like, prior to having a NES in the house, we had, like, one of those, like, just dedicated Pong machines that had, mm-hmm. like, 9 variations of Pong, yeah. turning it into different game modes, even though it was all basically the same thing. I remember having that and that being, like, a big deal in the house when we had it, and that's... I don't think that's when I got into games. I didn't really get into games. We had games were always in the house, but that was just kind of standard for yeah. I think for growing up. So I don't think that was particularly extraordinary. And it wasn't until like middle school, and I got into like late grade school and then middle school when I got into JRPGs is like when it switched from like, oh, we have games because kids have games, and that's yeah. just what you have, to like something I was really dedicated and interested in. And then, you know, went down deep rabbit holes of Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy 3/6 and Breath of Fire and stuff like that. I basically played any JRPG I could get my hand on, largely because you got the most for your money out of it, especially when you were doing those rentals. I remember my mom.
Everybody talks about rentals.
We talked about that a lot, too.
It's a lost art form. There's no more rent. There's no real rentals anymore. But, yeah, everybody we talk to is always we all have the shared experience about the rentals.
Yeah, and there's a story that my mom still tells where when Turtles in Time came out for the SNES,
yep.
like it was a big deal when that came out. Excellent game, like ton of fun, but the game costs like $80 and it takes like 90 minutes to beat.
And
I supposedly I am told that my brother and I were very upset when we finished it. And my mom was very upset. That it was over in 90 minutes and she had just spent $80, wasn't in a position to go spend another $60 on a game. And I remember she like called Nintendo customer service, which like,
whoa,
Konami published that.
But Nintendo will take your call.
I don't think she got anything out of it, but I think there was a very unhappy customer service person on the other end getting aimed out by my mom for the poor, shoddy value proposition that was Turtles in Time.
Mom went to bat. Like it.
Yeah, that's one thing that I'm glad about is nowadays, you know, even when people complained about game prices going from 50, 60 in the last generation, it's so much nicer having a standardized price because I remember, like, Phantasy Star 4 when that came out as a $100 game and, well... I bought it anyways.
Yeah, and Chrono Trigger was like $90, wasn't it?
Yeah, the JRPGs, they had the bigger cartridge sizes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, those were famously, like Earthbound, I think, was also like more expensive and like the biggest cart at the time when it came out. But I remember paying well over $60 for a bunch of those games.
Yeah, I want to say I paid like $85 or $90 for Final Fantasy III at Target. I do remember specifically saving my money up, like Christmas gifts of cash, and going to Target and being like, "I've got enough. All right, here we go."
Also, speaking to the rental thing, I have this story, and I think it's kind of shared with a lot of people. Also, did you ever have your mom or your dad actually rent you out a game that when you actually did put it in, it wasn't that good, but you were not really sure how to react to it? Because for me, it was Uncle Fester's Quest. And when I started playing that, it was not too good, but I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to tell them that it was a terrible game.
And you didn't want to say that you wasted the rental.
You wasted your rental fee.
You need to play that game.
You know, I got burned by a lot of JRPGs that way because I just started getting whatever looked like a JRPG at that point, and I cannot remember the one that was, well, Beyond the Beyond. That ruined the obvious one.
I actually bought that.
Oh yeah, me too. Secret of the... I cannot remember what this game was called. It's Game for the SNES.
Tecmo Secret of the Stars.
Yeah, that game fucking sucked.
That was horrible.
Oh my god, that game was terrible. And that, I think that was one of the early instances of like, oh, games can be bad. Like, games out, can be really bad.
It came out so late in the Super Nintendo wipe, and it looked worse than an NES game.
Yeah, now I gotta look. Oh yeah, I remember this.
Mine was Secret of Evermore because I got that for my birthday, and I thought, I'm like, hey, this is like Secret of Mana, right?
The Americanized
JRPG. But you have a dog and a bazooka, and no, this is not as good as Secret of Mana. I wish I had gotten that instead.
So do you still play JRPGs, or I know you were just getting into Fire Emblem just recently.
Yeah, I finished the. I mean, I don't know if I considered Fire Emblem an RPG so much. Yeah. But I mean, it's got RPG elements for sure. And I just played through Earthbound, which I had never done before. And the Wii release seemed like a good way to do that, and also a legal way to do that. And that's why now I find myself in an odd position where, like, once we're through the holiday season, I'd love to play Mother 3, but I don't know. I'd like to do it and then also be able to write about it and do stuff like that, but I don't know how I'd do that without getting into a weird gray area. So I need to look into that. But I mean, not a lot of really great JRPGs out. Like, I'm trying to think of what I even would play if you were to play one. I mean, I certainly did not touch Final Fantasy 13 with, like, a long stick. I had zero interest in.
I think I dropped off the Final Fantasy wagon after I played 9. I never played 7 or 8.
Eight's the best.
Oh, well.
Oh, no. Kevin.
I'd go with number 9, but I'm old school.
Kevin once went on a rant for about like 20 minutes about how he doesn't like 8.
It's
a great game. 8's great because you can break it. Like, half the reason it's fun is because it's so messed up. Like, the way you can destroy the combat system by just equipping death to your
death and stone.
Yeah. Although, I didn't know about that at the time, and then when I played it through for like the third time, it made it really fun. I liked 8 more than 7, even though I probably played 7 more, much like everyone at the time.
What broke it for 8 for me was fact that it's the first one where bosses didn't give you experience or gold when you killed them. And if you killed someone with death or stone on your weapon, you didn't get experience for that. So, like, I got to the end of the game, and I was like, why am I level 10 on everyone? had to grind.
What's that JRPG that you just played, like, earlier this year, Kevin?
Oh, Ni No Kuni.
No, not Ni No Kuni, the one on the Wii. Last Story?
Last Story.
Right. That's a great one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I heard good things about it. I never got around to playing that. What was Xenoblade?
Yeah,
that was the other one on the Wii, right?
Yeah.
I tried that. I thought it was interesting, but I don't particularly care for MMO-style combat, and that game is all up in MMO-style combat, so I kind of got tired of it pretty quickly.
You might like the Last Story because it's a real short RPG. It has a lot of content, but they really streamlined it, so you don't have you don't do grinding much. You pretty much everything's real quick, but you get a lot of content. So I think it took me somewhere around 25 hours, but it felt like a good 80-hour game.
Well, that's not 25 is nice. Like that's like a really that's part of the reason I play JRPGs few and far between, especially if they're not handheld, where you can just kind of like pick it up whenever. Is the time commitment like the big lengthy games that I play are like a Bethesda game every 2 years or like a Grand Theft Auto. But I just, you know, I would much rather have 15, 6 to 8 hour experiences than like 2 80-hour experiences. Like that's just me. But I'm also in a position where I can get access to a lot more games and not have to pay for the vast majority of them. Were the script flipped on that, I might be singing a completely different tune.
So you went into you studied journalism in college. Were you thinking already that I wanted to get into game journalism or work in the game industry itself, or were you taking journalism because you wanted to be, you know, a field reporter or something like that, or work for the Tribune, or what was your mindset at that point?
You know, I fell into games writing just by accident in high school, back when it became like basic web development became kind of ubiquitous and accessible to the layman. So you have like GeoCities and Angel Fire and Tripod and, and all of these, you know, now pretty crappy web services, but places that you either, you know, I knew a basic HTML, but you could also use, you know, template programs to get your own website up and running, with relative ease. And so you got to put something there. And I was playing a lot of games at the time. So I would write about games and often write about games that I hadn't even played because who cares? It was my own website. I don't have to have an ethics policy when I'm 14. And so I was doing that. And then, you know, high school rolled around and I seemed to have a knack for writing, but I hadn't really like necessarily established that's what I wanted to do as a career. And I had a high school teacher that pointed out, well, you know, one way that people get paid for writing is journalism. You know, have you thought about, you know, working for the high school newspaper? And so I got into that, did that for a couple of years, eventually became the editor in chief in my senior year of high school. And at that point, like it had been working out pretty well for me. So I, applied to be, in the communications program at my college, the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, which is in the same city where, Volition is located. In the middle of nowhere, Illinois, and I did journalism there, and I was mostly just happy to be able to tell my parents that I had, you know, picked a profession, even if I didn't know if that was going to work out or not. But it got me out of school in 4 years, and by the end of it, I'd done enough freelancing, and it kind of lined up some opportunities that it seemed like I could actually make a go at it. But I wouldn't say that was necessarily the plan from the start. Most of my career has been sort of just hobbling from thing to thing and it nicely working out along the way.
On that note, what do you, what's the, I guess, article or work that you're most proud of that you've been doing? I mean, I know you guys had like, what, more than a million hits on that Xbox DRM story, but, just something that, I mean, doesn't have to be the most popular thing, but something that you're,
dog's freaking out here. That dog is very vocal about my career.
Yeah,
very, very much different. Like, just shut up.
Oh, jeez.
I like. It's fun to publish like those Xbox story, like that Xbox One DRM story, because you know, Giant Bomb's kind of a tiny site, and it's sort of fun every once in a while to have the whole world pay attention to us, be like, "Ha ha, we got you." We're punching above our weight. And because we're happy to kind of be in our own corner with our extremely devoted fans, and that works just fine for us. We're not committed to growth in that sort of way. It's been super exciting to do all this horror coverage, and I know that's for a very minority of Giant Bomb's audience, but the people that do like it really, really like it, and that's always fun. I definitely got a kick out of, much earlier in the year, you know, writing and looking into Monster Hunter and Fire Emblem and 999 and VLR and like all these tinier games. I definitely went out of my way to try and identify different audiences on Giant Bomb that were not necessarily finding the games they liked represented. So I was making no guarantees that I would like those games, but I definitely wanted to put in maybe a more full faith effort into playing and investigating these games. To have an opinion about them in a way that maybe we'd been, you know, slightly dismissive about in the past. And sometimes being, you know, dismissive can be very funny, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, I thought that, you know, you can only do that so many times, right? Like, you can only say, I don't understand Monster Hunter so many times before it just becomes a game that we're just ignoring because you can't really mine it for comedy anymore. So I thought it was interesting to try and give that a shot. And it was, you know, it was cool to spend 10 hours with that and then be able to say, well, this is what I think of Monster Hunter, even if, you know, it's not really my thing. I think definitely a specialization has been some of the stuff that's been, my favorite pieces that I've been working on for sure.
I got to say, Patrick, I think, so you've got your upcoming TED Talk, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to be...
No pressure.
No pressure. But you that's going to be based on the Fez 2 article that you wrote earlier this year, right? Or at least that was the inspiration for it?
Yeah, that is sort of the genesis. I had someone that was on the organization committee for this TED Talk in Dearborn, Michigan, be like, hey, you should think about pitching something. I'd never in a million you know, years thought about pitching something for something like this. I've never done a talk like this before. I'm, you know, used to just being up on like a Giant Bomb panel and just bullshitting half drunk for 3 hours. And
lots of scotch.
Just enough. It's a fine line. It's a fine, fine line.
Brad had a lot. We were at the panel.
We were at the panel, yes.
Hey, Tsukiyagi, he can hold his own. He can hold his own. And so, yeah, so the Fez 2 article, which was sort of about like the relationship that Phil Fish had with his audience and then how that related to my own relationship with my audience and sort of how you deal with vitriolic criticism and how you deal with wanting to get feedback, but also how do you wade through that and weigh what's important. That sort of turned into a larger talk, which I have to work on that after this, is sort of about the tenor and discourse and of commentary on the internet and sort of what, you know, is there something that, like, why is it this way? Because there's a lot of science that explains why it is this way. And then, so, like, the structure of the talk is, like, what does the science tell us about what's happening and why it's happening and why the level of discourse is as bad as it is? What has my experience been in it? And then what have been some solutions that different communities have applied to try and wade through comments and commentary and feedback on the internet without just giving up on it entirely. And then at the end is sort of, my potential solution to that, or at least an idea of how we might be able to deal with it. So it's a lot of my experiences with sort of being a public figure on the internet, even if it's in, you know, a community, you know, it's not like a celebrity, but it's like, you know, I'm fairly popular in video games. But these days, everybody, you know, especially if you don't have specific control over your privacy settings, most people are public on Twitter, even if they kind of think that they're private and just talking to their friends. Like, no, you're not. Like, anyone can look at it and anyone can embed those tweets. And a lot of people aren't very particular about, you know, their privacy settings on Facebook and Instagram and all these other things. And it's very easy overnight to be kind of like caught up in something you didn't expect because of, you know, maybe some comments you made. So it's a lot of those ideas that have been kind of like swing around in my head that I'm trying to formulate into something that sounds smart that I will have to give later this month in Michigan.
Is dealing with social media and, you know, privacy and a public persona and those kind of things, is that something that came easy to you, or did you just kind of have to, well, I mean, I guess you had to learn it on the fly, but was it something that, you know, you had some missteps or some kind of regret earlier or something like that?
I mean, I still screw up all the time. I think it's natural. What is problematic about social media, especially Twitter, is that it, you know, plays to our worst impulses. When we get upset about something or someone in real life, like, more often than not, we either don't say anything or we considered what we're going to say before we're going to say it, whereas things like Twitter, especially if you add in the, you know, a veil of anonymity, which doesn't explain away everything, but is certainly a part of it, it plays to our worst tendencies. Like, people just even the nicest people can turn into dicks a whole lot faster. Yeah. On the internet. I mean, I myself got caught up in that when the conversation over Adblock, raising money in order to run ads to promote Adblock. The irony in that infuriated me. And you know, the sort of the very heated conversation that happens between a content creator and the consumer of that content over conversations like that. And yeah, I said, you know, offhandedly that people that use Adblock should die in a fire. Like, I shouldn't have said that. Like, that was dumb. Like, that's painting people with a really broad brush in a way that, you know, I should be above. You know, I regret saying that, but I said it, and, you know, I guess you could delete it and try and hide it, but that doesn't make a lot of sense either. So even as much time as I've spent online and doing things like this, you know, I'm still kind of figuring it out as I go along and, you know, making mistakes along the way, and then just trying to learn from that for the next time, which most of the lessons are just shut up.
Or maybe just take a breath before you post that tweet next time, right?
Yeah, put it in your drafts folder, look at it 20 minutes from now, and you know, do you still feel the same way? Chances are you probably won't.
Yeah, I guess that's the reaction for all three of us with the all the Penny Arcade fallout and everything.
Yeah,
we've been big fans of Penny Arcade since the beginning, and we're still big fans of them. But yeah, like the whole like maybe you should just be quiet for a little bit and just not say anything right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting discussion. I mean, I'm of the camp that I enjoy PAX for PAX. I enjoy the comic as the comic, and the people who make it, I mean, yeah, they make mistakes and they're human. So I'm not perfect, and I will say stuff that I regret. And as you just said, Patrick, you know, you post that tweet, and it's like, as long as you can learn from it and move forward, I think that's the most beneficial thing, or at least I'm hopeful that most people can.
Right. Yeah. No. Definitely agree.
Did you have anything else?
Yeah, are we still okay on time?
Yeah, we can go a couple more minutes. Okay. So if you get another question or two before we head to the end.
Do you have any other genres that you're kind of looking forward to trying out that you haven't tried out yet?
I've never played an MMO to any meaningful degree. I've always thought about maybe I should pop on Warcraft now that you can play, you know, a pretty significant chunk of it for free. Especially once they sort of did, what was it, like the Burning Crusade or whatever it was that like revamped a lot of that early game content. You know, I've just, you know, that MMOs have played into my previous feeling of like time investment versus being able to experience many things. And MMOs are like the worst example of that, where you can sink hundreds and hundreds of hours into it in and of itself. But clearly, you know, I have plenty of friends that have done that and they've gotten really meaningful experiences out of it. So, you know, maybe I'm just missing something and just assuming I wouldn't get anything out of it because I haven't tried it. But it seems like at this point, like, probably don't need to play World of Warcraft. And then I maybe looked at the new Final Fantasy, A Realm Reborn, and by all accounts, that's just like World of Warcraft with chocobos.
My roommate's playing that, and he likes it quite a bit. But he's run into the problem where he pretty much wants to do everything. So he's multi-classed into like six different types of, you know, classes. So he's like a miner and a blacksmith and
An NPC.
Yeah, he's become the NPC in town that you go visit when the other people are going on quests.
Yeah, he's our fourth member, but he's out sick right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, we make fun of him for Final Fantasy.
So Patrick, with MMOs, how about Elder Scrolls Online? I mean, that's a...
It looks like World of Warcraft too.
Okay.
Yeah,
I guess at this one, I expect that mold can't last much longer. It can't sustain, like, you know, you look at the Old Republic. I think Elder Scrolls is a big risk too, in that it was designed during a time when making a game like World of Warcraft maybe made a lot of sense. But that I'm just not interested in that type of game, it's increasingly clear that. You know, I don't expect that Blizzard will come out with a game very much like World of Warcraft when they have their next major MMO, you know, Project Titan or whatever it's called. So I'm sort of waiting for whatever the next big thing is in that space. And maybe it's going to be something that's completely different than, you know, an RPG. And maybe it's games like Destiny that sort of like mold some of the bits from MMOs, fold it into a genre that is a little more appealing to me. I do think EverQuest 2 looks pretty cool. EverQuest Next.
That seems
like potentially a good... They seem like they've really... Everything I've read about it, they are saying the right things, which is like, we can't just make EverQuest 3. Like, we've got to rethink this. And they seem to be saying all the right things that would get me to at least want to try it. Because the moment it's just like... The moment you say tank, like, I've fallen asleep. it tells me everything I need to know about the design of that game.
Yep.
And that I'm just not that interested. So I'm hoping EverQuest Next maybe is something different.
Foxholes is the future.
As much as I loved the Old Republic for the setting and, like, you know, having a Jedi with a lightsaber, it was still just an MMO.
Yeah, me and John got into that.
I got all the way to max level, and after that,
we pre-ordered it and everything, and it was just, after a while, it was, oh, this is really the same thing.
It's an MMO.
It did take us like 100 hours to figure that out, but...
hit those number keys one through...
I'm the one who's smart enough to skip MMOs.
Yeah, I think the last one Kevin ever played was City of Heroes, the only one
I played, and never doing that mistake again.
Anybody else?
I think we're good. I don't have anything else.
Well, what we like to do also on the podcast is we call it gamer goals for the week. So since you're on and we have you,
sure.
So what gamer goals do you have for the week? Like myself, I'm still trying to pass Saints Row 4.
Yeah, he still hasn't beaten that.
Yeah, which unfortunately
he hasn't missed the great '80s movie moment near the end. So it's been really hard to not tell him about it. But I wanted to get through that part because that was probably I actually clapped my hands and laughed out loud when that happened.
I have to play fine games like Payday 2 over and over again because I'm retarded.
That heist, you gotta do that heist 2 minutes faster.
Yeah. So, yeah, do you have any what's your gaming goal for the week? What's Patrick?
Well, I hit, I guess, last week's, which was my wife was gone all week, and that seemed like the perfect time to kind of shuttle through GTA,
yep.
Sort of uninterrupted. So I checkboxed that. I mean, I'd like to actually go back in and check out some of the side quest stuff. I'm crossing my fingers that they do produce a PC or next-gen version of that game.
Oh, please.
Because I mean, it's such a gorgeous looking game running that at 1080p, 60 frames a second. That's where I'd like to play the DLC, which I assume they'll probably end up making some. At least I'm hoping that they'll do some DLC because I thought the DLC for 4 was the best stuff.
Agreed. Ballad of Gay Tony was my favorite piece of content out of that. So
I preferred Lost and Damned, but Ballad of Gay Tony was also excellent. I think Rockstar is way better when they're telling 8 to 10 hour stories instead of 40 hour stories. But that's separate discussion. But so I finished that. So I checkboxed that. So now I can sort of like start figuring out what I want to touch next. I have Splinter Cell Blacklist on my computer. I've heard that was pretty good, and haven't had a chance to play that yet. Rayman Legends is on my Wii U. So I think Rayman Legends is like on my radar to try and chip through this week, and then we'll see if I can acquire a copy of Beyond Two Souls because
I want to play that.
Heavy Rain was a deeply flawed game, but I admired its ambition, and Beyond Two Souls looks so damn weird that I need to know what's inside there.
I was the same way. I mean, I was the first one out of our group here to buy a PS3, and when I bought Heavy Rain, I played through a good portion of it. And then,
we actually watched you play
Dan watched me play through a good portion of that. And then he came and started playing his own version of the game. So it's interesting to see the different choices you make, too. But that was, like you said, it's a great experience, not the best game, per se. So I hope Beyond Two Souls is a better game with that same storytelling. So I'm pretty excited for that one myself.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious about that. So I think now with GTA out of the way, I feel like I can keep up with like the sprint. Mm-hmm. I have about 2 weeks before things get pretty nuts. You know, I mean, Assassin's Creed 4 comes out at the end of the month, or no? Yes.
I think so. Yeah, end of October, right? Yeah.
I think I'm going to wait for either the next gen or PC versions of that game, along with Watch Dogs.
Ooh, yeah. We're all anticipating. I'm in the same.
I think I might wait for Assassin's Creed 4 because I hope it's, I don't know, I'm the only person out of our group who played the Assassin's Creed games.
No, I played 1 and 2,
oh, you
but
played
you're
one
the only
two.
One who
I'm the only
persevered.
One who persevered and played Revelations, Brotherhood, and 3, so.
I played Brotherhood. 3 was, like, just burning me alive during the 20 hours that I did not care for that game at all.
Yeah. We had a very special episode where John ranted.
I liked the twist in the beginning. After the first four hours, when you found out what happened, I'm like, oh, okay, they've got a cool storytelling thing going here. And then it just went nowhere.
Then the game should have ended.
And just walking around those colonial cities, I'm like, everything's too small, and I can't. There's no way to get around very easily. And I like my big cities, or European cities as they were. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting with 4 with being set in the Caribbean and having, more of the wilderness exploration and pirates. So I might wait and see on that one.
Cool. Well, thanks, Patrick, for letting us have you on the podcast and everything. We'd like to have you on again if you're ever free again.
Sure. Absolutely. We'd be happy to.
Great.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome. I'll send you the links once we put this up and everything. So thanks again.
Yeah, sure. Patrick, no thanks problem. A lot.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.
Have a good one.
You too.